This is Brennan and Bethany with Theralink Podcast. We believe that a strong therapist-parent connection is essential for therapy success. Join us each episode as we create a community that demystifies therapists and empowers parents.
Today, we interview Mallory Roche. She's on faculty at the Occupational Therapy School at Augusta University. She's the director of the Low Vision Clinic at the university, and she's also the director of Steps of Grace, a dance school for children with special needs. Mallory, thank you so much for being with us. Just to get started, will you please start by telling us about Steps of Grace?
I will. Thank you so much for having me. So my name is Mallory Roche. I'm an occupational therapist. I started Steps of Grace 13 years ago. This is our 13th season. So we have adaptive dance classes for children with special needs. We have a variety of special needs and diagnoses, a variety of ages. We start at age 3 and go all the way up to have some children. I call them my kids, but they're young adults now. I had one who turned 21 yesterday, actually. So I have some, you know, teenagers all the way up to early adulthood. We have 4 different classes, and they are based on age. And so they're each 45 minutes. So we have class on Tuesday afternoons. We have those 4 classes. It is just my favorite part of the week is teaching ballet.
That's awesome. Are you still treating kids as well?
I am not treating kids. So I worked in pediatrics full-time for years and then transitioned over to working as faculty. So I'm on faculty in the Augusta University Occupational Therapy Program full-time. I do a little bit of clinical work in low vision with typically older adults with low vision. Kind of in my free time, I have Steps of Grace.
Oh, that's awesome. So to the therapists who have dreams of starting something like Steps of Grace, what advice do you have?
Yeah, so I think the hardest part for me with Steps of Grace was actually getting started. I had these dreams of starting this program. I was a dancer growing up and knew that I wanted to integrate that somehow into my career. And so I kind of thought about it and talked about it and finally just bit the bullet and started. And that was really, that initiation was really the hardest part for me because I was a young therapist. You know, I just graduated from OT school. But I guess my advice would be to use the relationships that you have. So the way we got started was, I'm not from Augusta, so I didn't grow up dancing here, but I did teach ballet when I was in OT school for a local dance studio. And so that was my connection. And so when I decided I was going to do this, I knew them. So I just called them up and kind of told them, you know, what I wanted to do. And they were totally on board with me using their studio, renting space, performing in their recitals. That was key, really, was to have that relationship and use that relationship to really get started. Using relationships that I have with other therapists in the area who would tell their clients, you know, tell their kids and parents about us and refer them over to us for ballet classes. So really just, you know, using those relationships that you have and have already built has really been key for me.
Mallory, do you use your ballet lessons as like a platform for integrating therapy, or is this, do you see it more as an opportunity for these children to have some time with children like them, you know, build community? Is there a kind of a lens on providing therapy during these sessions as well?
Yeah, so it's kind of a balance. I would say the overarching goal is participation, is children being able to participate in this, you know, quote unquote, typical extracurricular activity. And that's, you know, that's what we want them to do. We want them to be able to come after school and put on their leotard and tights and ballet shoes and go to ballet class, just like their peers do, just like maybe their sisters do. We want them to be around other children, be able to engage socially. We really want them, you know, their parents to be able to have kind of that that time out where they can have a little bit of a respite and make relationships with other parents who are living similar stories. So really that is, I think, the goal is. Mm-hmm. But ballet is just naturally a therapeutic activity. There are so many skills that the kids work on. They're working on their balance, they're working on their coordination, their strength, their impulse control, their ability to follow directions, their social interactions. So there's so many things about ballet that are therapeutic just because of the nature of what it is. But we really try to not focus on, you know, that piece of it so much as just getting them to be able to participate in this.
Absolutely.
Do you have kids that use adaptive equipment to participate?
I do. You know, it kind of ebbs and flows as far as, you know, the diagnoses that I have and the children that enroll each year. This year, I do have two children in my youngest class. I think they're like maybe 4 and 6 who are in wheelchairs. And so we kind of do a combination of staying in the wheelchair for portions of the class. If the kids want to get out of their wheelchair and sit on the floor with a buddy, then they can do that, you know, during like circle time. So it depends on, you know, really their preferences and what they want to do.
You mentioned buddies. I'm curious about staffing. So does each child have like a one-on-one? Is it a volunteer that's with them?
Yes. So I have lots of volunteers who just want to be involved in Steps of Grace. So I have kind of an in with the OT students since I'm on faculty. And a lot of those girls, I say girls, we do have guys in our program too, but it's just, you know, the majority are women who just have a heart to serve. And a lot of them have dance backgrounds. So I have lots of OT student volunteers. I also have people in the community who maybe they're looking for hours, you know, volunteer hours that they need for a college application, or they want to go to OT school or PT school or speech therapy school, and so they want to volunteer. So yes, we do have lots and lots of helpers. It's not necessarily one-on-one. I do have some kids who do have, you know, one-on-one assistance, but some kids, you know, may not need that level of assistance. And so it could be like a 3-to-1 ratio. But yes, that is the only way that I'm able to make this program run successfully is by having extra hands in there.
Sure. No, that's amazing. So my son plays soccer for a league. It's called Top Soccer for Children with Disabilities. And they have a buddy program as well. And it's typically volunteer mm-hmm. high school students. For a while, we did have PT and OT students as well mm-hmm. Participating as volunteers. And, you know, as a parent, it's just been amazing to watch like the relationships that develop between the yes. buddies and the children. What we also found too is that a lot of the times those relationships will then carry over outside of soccer. So, you know, all of a sudden we now have a pool of potential babysitters.
Oh, yes. You know, yes. My helpers end up babysitting lots of the children.
Yeah.
Which is great because they know yeah. them, they have relationships. They are aware of, you know, different abilities. So it just is kind of a win-win all around.
Yep. Now, and I've found too that, you know, even like the younger kids that participate as buddies, the high school kids that are doing it, you know, they're extremely, you know, empathetic and passionate about it. And they bring a fun element yes. to these games and practices. And, you know, I think that, you know, it's really been a win-win for all.
Yes, that's great. Yeah, we couldn't do it without volunteers.
So if you don't mind me switching over to your therapy days, if you could reach back and remember your pediatric days, I am interested to hear what is a common misconception about therapists that you wish parents understood. And as the Steps of Grace director, you may hear these conversations in the waiting mm-hmm. room of parents saying, you know, frustrated, mm-hmm. you know, cost, waiting lists, mm-hmm. you know, all these things. You know, what kind of, from a therapist perspective, do you have to speak into that?
Yeah, I think that, and parents may understand this, but I hope that they understand that, like, we really love their children. Like, we really want the best for them. We want them to live out their fullest potential. I remember as a therapist just, you know, going home at the end of the day and like just constantly thinking about treatment sessions and like, what can I do to, you know, to meet a goal for this child, or what activity can I do that's going to motivate this child? So I just hope that parents can, you know, really understand that we, you know, there are a lot of things that are challenging, you know, scheduling, insurance, like you said, wait lists, those kinds of things. At the end of the day, we really do love their children, and are doing everything that we can to meet their goals and to just help them live to their fullest ability.
Are there kids that you find choosing an activity like Steps of Grace in place of therapy, or do you find a lot of your kids are juggling all of it?
I think a lot of them are doing a lot of it. You know, I have kids who do PT, OT, speech, and they still come to Steps of Grace, and they'll do like hypnotherapy and adaptive swim. And I'm like, I don't know how y'all have time to do all these things. Like, it's a full-time job. I do have some kids, especially some of the older ones, who I think have, you know, for whatever reason, they're not in OT anymore. And so this is kind of their big thing that they do. You know, they're not doing OT speech PT anymore. And so they're really just doing Steps of Grace. So I think it's kind of a mixed bag.
Yeah, I can see situations where when I was in private practice, having that conversation with families, like, I think it's time for a new thing. You know, we've been working hard at therapy, but you know, we need socialization. We need a performance. We need a big goal. You know, the kids have lost the light in their eyes, you know, like we need something that'll light them up, you know? So I could definitely see a situation where something like Steps of Grace could be a good next step, or even a break from therapy, just to kind of light them up so they have that intrinsic motivation to work, you know?
Yes. Yes.
I guess kind of along those lines, you know, for the children that are having multiple therapies throughout the week, maybe receiving therapies in school as well, and then, you know, going to ballet on the weekends, do you notice like fatigue at certain points in time amongst some of those children? And like, how would you address that during a session?
Yeah. We have class on Tuesday afternoons, and so they've had a long day at school. Some of them maybe have gone to therapy afterwards, and then they're coming to ballet, and it's almost supper time and they're tired. And so, you know, I definitely see kids who, you know, they'll tell me, I'm tired. I'm ready to go home. I'm ready to take a shower and get in bed. And I'm like, listen, I get it. I'm the same way. You know, if a kid is just, you know, too tired and needs a break, they can sit down and take a break. What I have found though is once they, you know, once we get the music on and we get going, that kind of gives them a boost, and we usually are fine.
So is your staff therapy all therapy trained, or do you have all different backgrounds in your teaching staff?
So I am actually, up until this year, have been the only teacher. I've been doing it all. This year, I have pulled in a couple of ladies. One is a PT, and she has an extensive dance background. And another is a college student, but she wants to go to speech and language therapy school. But she has a dance background and has been helping with Steps of Grace for like over 10 years. And I use them mostly just, you know, to fill in and sub. We have a 4-month-old, so I just need a little bit more help with the baby at home.
Congratulations.
Thank you. So yeah, they both have backgrounds in dance.
Okay. So what are your most common, you know, resources or strategies or tools that you're telling them or your volunteers, like, okay, in this situation, you know, what do you see that you're going to all the time and kind of teaching again and again and again to your teachers or volunteers?
Yeah. So, one of the big things that I really have to encourage my volunteers to do is if a kid runs, follow them. Because if one runs, you know, then everybody else is going to see it and think that they can run. And that then it just becomes chaos. We talk a lot about, you know, crowd control. So if you have a child who gets up from the circle and runs away, you know, you're going to have to stand up and go take their hand and bring them back in the circle. Because they're, you know, the volunteers are very sweet and they want to say, you know, Lucy, come back to your spot. And I'm like, nope, you got to get up and go over there and grab her hand and bring her back. So I think just being a little, you know, more assertive and things like that.
Mm-hmm. With any of the children that attend that have maybe more severe mobility issues or tighter muscles, mm-hmm. do you do specific training with the volunteers, with staff, as far as like stretching or positioning that might just kind of, I guess, lend itself to some of the safety involved with it?
Yes, definitely. With some of the kids who have those more severe mobility needs, we will go over, you know, especially for my kids who are in wheelchairs, we'll go over transfers, you know, what it looks like to transfer them from their wheelchair to sitting on the floor and vice versa. Or, you know, there are some kids who aren't able to go from sit to stand or stand to sit independently. And so we have to talk about and train them on how, you know, what kind of supports we need to give them. So we do that. And it's kind of, you know, there's no ahead of time training. It's all sort of on the job learning. And so we'll just sort of go through those at, you know, I'll have the kids, you know, we're all going to sit down right now. And, you know, one child, maybe Peyton, needs help, you know, going from stand to sit independently. And so I'll demonstrate what that looks like, what kind of support she needs. And so then they're able to provide that support.
Terrific.
So in your role at Augusta University, what trends are you seeing in incoming students? Is there a lot of applicants each year? Are you guys having to, you know, market the OT field, or what do you see?
Yeah, we do see quite a few applicants, always more than spots we have available. We are actually in the middle of interviews right now. We have 45 spots per cohort, and we've already interviewed, gosh, maybe 25, maybe even 30 applicants. And then we have several more interview days scheduled. So it's nice for us because we kind of get to pick the cream of the crop, but, you know, harder for applicants because they don't all get in on their first try. So, you know, that hasn't been an issue at this point. You know, we haven't really been having to go out and market and, you know, talk to students about why they should choose OT, which that's something that we certainly do, but not necessarily because we have to.
Right. It's an interesting field. Not often when you're out in public and someone asks what you do and you say, I'm an occupational therapist, do they know what you're talking about still? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a joke that we've always laughed about. We've made t-shirts about, you know, forever. But it still seems like people don't really know. But, you know, little by little, a couple people will say, oh, I know someone who's OT, or I know someone who got OT, you know. Which makes our job really hard when we're in the schools and teachers still don't really understand what we're there for. Or yes, and even sometimes we'll get parents with a very specific idea of what we do come in for private practice and not fully understand what it's going to be. So I'm excited for just more OTs out there and more people wanting to be OTs.
Kind of along those lines, I guess, like broader healthcare question, you know, are you seeing, I think, kind of globally more demand for OT at this point in time? And do you think that the rate of applicants, students, and I guess really students coming out of school, like, is keeping up with that demand?
I think so. I mean, I feel like we're in a field that is always going to be needed. OTs can do so much. We can work in so many different areas, from schools to private practice to hospitals to nursing homes. You know, we can do so many things that I think that, you know, there's always going to be a need for OT. And two, I think we're starting to see a lot more community-based practice. Mm-hmm. Bethany, you'd be interested in this. We have a lot of community-based fieldwork sites now. So they're not necessarily the traditional, you know, medical model. We have students in an elementary school who have, they've been working with Dr. Swift, LeSharon Swift, and they have developed a program to improve literacy rates. And it's just a very sensory-rich program, but it doesn't look like your traditional one-on-one therapy because all the kids are coming through and they're rotating through different stations. And they're seeing so much progress in, like, visual perceptual skills.
Is she doing that at a pre-K level or elementary level?
It's elementary. So it's at Jenkins White Elementary School. And it's all of the students. They are all able to rotate through this. And they're working with College of Education. And they've just gotten like a $2 million grant to extend it because it's been going, you know, they've had such great feedback. So we've got that. We've got a level one field work where students are working at a special needs preschool at Warren Baptist. They have a week long, not preschool, sorry, Vacation Bible School. So they have a week-long VBS for children with special needs. And so they go and they work, you know, that. So there are just a lot of these more non-traditional areas that I think we're going to see OTs in those spaces more, which is going to be more of a demand for it.
If you take the skills of an occupational therapist and you take away the restraints of insurance, it's like,
right.
Yes.
100%. And really that's what Steps of Grace is. You know, it's a community-based program. It's therapeutic, you know, so it's kind of that similar concept.
Mm-hmm. Are you a 501c3?
We are not. So I have kind of gone back and forth on doing the nonprofit status for years. I haven't done it because in all reality, I've always had a full-time job, and this has just kind of been my extra thing, and we don't have a ton of expenses. I pay rent to the dance studio to use their space, and then I have the parents, you know, they pay a small monthly fee so that I can cover the expenses. So I've just weighed the pros and cons of it, and I think eventually I will. I just haven't done it quite yet. And even with me not being a nonprofit, I have people who tell me, you know, I want to donate. I want to pay for, you know, two kids for their yearly tuition. And, you know, I always tell them, I'm like, I just want to be, you know, transparent. I'm not a 501c3. And they're like, that's fine. I don't care.
Sure. Are there grant funding opportunities that you'd be able to apply for as well to support?
Yeah, so that's the thing. I would be able to apply for some grants if I did have that nonprofit status. But it's working right now like it is.
Well, I love that you guys have had the generosity to keep that going. I was on your website and noticed the options scholarship that were available from different specific people. And I just love that. And your website, can you say what your website is if anyone wants to check it out?
Yeah, it is stepsofgraceballet.com. And we're on Instagram and Facebook too. So I try to post pictures of the kids and videos of the kids in class. One of the things that I didn't really think about when I started this, you know, I just really wanted kids to be able to come to dance class, you know, regardless of if they could walk independently or, you know, if they had these mobility skills that other kids did. But one thing I wasn't really thinking about is the relationships that they would form. I have some children who have danced with me for all 13 years that we've been open. And so they've all become friends and they have play dates and they invite each other to birthday parties and spend the night parties and their parents are friends now. So I think that just seeing that those relationships form was something that I just didn't really think about, but it's been really one of the sweetest things about the whole program is just seeing those friendships and those bonds between both the students and their parents.
Oh yeah. I can just picture the waiting room support sessions that happened. Yeah. I'm sure you got tissue boxes out there.
Yes. Yeah. And parents, that's what they do. You know, they can sit out there and they can, you know, read a book, or they can chat with another parent who is in the same, similar situation. So it's just really a good environment for everybody.
I think probably one of the tangential, unseen benefits of some of that too, is that there's a lot of resource sharing that goes on between parents. Yes. You know, for us, for instance, on the sidelines watching soccer, mm-hmm. same thing. It's, so my son's developed some great relationships with friends, one family in particular we become very close with, and they'll have play dates and we go to their house, they come to ours. Mm-hmm. They were actually the first ones that tipped us off to a special needs trust and the benefits of having that in place for a child with a disability. Mm-hmm. They were able to put us in touch with an attorney who had set up the trust for their daughter. So, I think just some of that, kind of organic feedback and input that happens between parents, there's a lot of value there.
Yes, for sure. Just knowing you're not alone, I think, is one huge thing. Mm-hmm.
Well, applause to you for doing this for 13 years on the side of a full-time job.
Whoa.
Well done.
It's not always easy. I do have my days where I come home and I am so exhausted, but it's exhaustion in a great way. And, I step back and look at just the community that we've built, and it's all worth it.
Well, thank you so much for meeting with us, Mallory. This has been great. You've inspired someone to just start something.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm happy if anybody has questions or, just needs a little push to get going like I did in the beginning, I'm happy to talk with anybody about my experience.
Do you have questions for our guests? Send your questions to info@theralink.com. You can also find us at our website at theralink.com and on our socials with the handle @theralink.